So citta and cetasa clearly linked. For, you know, cetasa, that which emanates from citta. And cetasa, cetana is also karma. These terms, references. So where there's citta, and it's in its activated state, that should be called citta. It is associated with cetana. And cetana is translated as intention or sometimes volition. Volition may be, though it's not such a usual word, perhaps gives you the idea that not all intention is deliberate or considered or conceived of, but it's more or less some of it's just sort of spontaneous, seemingly spontaneous pushes and urges and trembles and resistances, like emotional, psychological, even physiological domain. Karma, action, but also karma, the field of karma also includes the results of action, called vipaka. Each karma, each action leaves a result, called vipaka. And the abiding tendency to the results, so if one is going in a particular direction repeatedly, you build up certain residues. So, you know, one action has a certain result. If you keep acting the same way with the same kind of inclination, you build up a residue which becomes a tendency or an acquisition. And it's referred to as upadhi. It defines you. It becomes the foundation for selfhood. It becomes your blueprint, your footprint. So much so that one foot easily wriggles into that shape. And to get it out of that takes some work. And generally the big picture is you set up strong inclinations that go against the residues, against the habits, check karma action, release the results and step out from the residual footprints. And this itself is of course very profound. Even to know what they are, you can see, is something. Because the nature of citta is holistic. That means that some aspects of citta seem to be other people, and some aspects of citta seem to be the past, and some aspects of it seem to be me, and some aspects of it may seem to be the possible future. But if it's directly experienced, that which is experienced, that which is affected, that which is effective, is in the domain of citta. But as so, in the nature of experiencing, you've only got this experiencing quality, and you know clearly sometimes that's her, or that's yesterday, and so for example, if you know a person becomes mentally disordered, dementia, they don't really know. They can't distinguish 25 years ago from today, and we can. But really, that's a particular function that the citta creates, called mano, that creates these divisions. That's me. That's you. That's for pragmatic purposes. Although this is naturally the way it has to be in this sensory condition. The problem is that qualities that those categories, that fill those categories, such as pleasure, displeasure, disagreeable, favourable and so forth, in all their subtle and gross forms, are seen as me or you. This is absolutely normal, it's projected. This projection process is called papancha. It's a sense of things start to build up intricate strategies and scenarios, as in one recognizes how we mind concocts these very intricate and beautifully configured scenarios of myself and you and what you are and what you think of me and so on, you know. And the future, of course, which is pretty much wide open because it hasn't happened, it never happens, so it's pretty much a blank sheet in which one can really project all one's desires and fears. And the past, of which is not so blank, but it's certainly, you know, you can consider that how many moments there have been in this lifetime and how many you actually remember. And not just remember, but are stabbed by, worried by, hounded by, nostalgic for, weeping over, longing for. Percentage. You know, putting the laundry out on Thursday night was not a big deal. You know, other things stay there for a long time. So there's this charged quality. Potencies. Now this is how it is, I suggest. And maybe it's something to be learned from that is not that there's there isn't anybody else, and not that people aren't, you know, skillful and unskillful and so forth, but just noticing what one's jitta actually accumulates and stores potent. And is brought out at a moment's notice and unfolded. And this is the karmic process. And that becomes the basis for one's future actions. Since this is how it is, then we would do ourselves a favour by not storing up the negative, wouldn't we? Instead we would store up, there must have been something positive happening. Have got this far, and we'd store those up and feel rather blessed and and at times of course we can recollect that, and other times just stuff rushes up, and it's not that we chose it as a conscious action, but we were triggered, volitional triggering, boom, boom, and then the whole thing arises with all its papancha escalating, proliferating tendencies and scenarios develop that we feel very much enmeshed in, throttled by, smothered by, overwhelmed with. And this is myself. That which is most familiar becomes experienced as myself. This is the, you know, domain of citta. And of course, the teachings are, well, you know, best to do bright karma, good actions, and learn how to dissolve or discharge the negative ones, how to relinquish, how to not get stuck in them, how to do the forgiving or the releasing or whatever it takes to clear that, and how to bring up the good and stay with that. This we call right effort, inclinations, what you're interested in. There's a particular favouring that is to be encouraged. Something about the mind is it tends to unconsciously note the unpleasant. The triggering of the unpleasant. This is a mind that is more embedded, more inclined towards the experience of ill will. Doesn't mean she's a nasty person. It means, for one reason or another, the mind is more inclined, embedded in that experience either of having ill will directed towards me, you know. So the ill will is, if you see it, it's like in two forms. One is other people do bad to me, it hurts me, I remember it, it makes me tight and narrow and defensive, therefore I'm brittle, therefore I get, in that tight defensive way, I get angry, because that's what happens when we get pushed. When you compress the citta with hostility, it either collapses completely or it pushes back with ill will, complaining, grumbling, fighting back, you know. And it's probably better to fight back than just collapse altogether. So there's sometimes it's this sense of negativity, irritability, is because of the, we've been in a field where, hostility has been presented to ourselves, or non-loving. Sometimes, we look at this thing very broadly. It's maybe sometimes it's actual direct malice, sometimes it's shaming, putting down, belittling, negative comparisons, you're not as good as, you should be better than, raising the bar all the time, so you always feel you're not quite good enough. It can be this, which isn't necessarily hatred in a raw way, but is not loving, is not lifting, is not cherishing, is not valuing, is not deeply appreciating. And, so there's also this, can be like a chronic low-level ill will, is just the actual absence of goodwill. One is treated as a thing, an object. So there's no real touching of the heart. And this is punishing, and this is kind of what happens in prisons, really. Or it is not necessarily that one is constantly brutalized, but the sense of being seen as a subjective, sensitive being, or given those the kind of things we would normally offer, like what would you like, or how can you make, all that's taken away. So this is just the complete withdrawal of sympathy. And so that can be extreme, or perhaps, less extreme, but still experienced. One is seen as a student in a class who's not quite up there at the top of the line, or, the kid who wasn't as good as an elder brother, or what, you name it. Comparative. The withdrawal of metta. Metta comes from sympathy, recognizing this one too feels, senses, is citta. This is citta. This is citta too. This is also sensitive. And the metta is that inclination to move towards that being with a kind of generous and how could I help that quality. How could I, to see it and to wish to be warm and connect to that. And this can be radically missing. So then this, we could say, the result of that isn't necessarily through one's own volition, but through the volition of others, or the absence of volition of others. So a certain pattern gets established where one is always pushing harder to get, the warmth or the nourishment that citta needs. So it's pushing harder and it becomes a norm where one, one's shaped towards pushing harder. And it's that becomes the default. We don't even really do it as an act of will. It's just that's the norm, to constantly push harder to the higher state. And when this kind of comes over into meditation, then we get a certain intensity, but not the contentment and the comfort and the ease. And if this is also, you get results in the body becomes numbed or tight or tense. Doesn't really deeply relax. And these are things, then there's a footprint there. And one easily moves into that footprint. One is easily picks up signs that will take you back to that footprint. One sees in the manifold, multifaceted, multidimensional world, memory, internal, past, external, humans, things, trigger. And then I'm in that state again. And it can be gestures, things that on one level seem really minor. Seating arrangements, that can seem to be carrying all kinds of messages. And of course the messages come from the citta, and one could say, well, you know, snap out of it. But they're not always under one's control, because some of these things, you didn't put them there in the first place, they were planted. Yeah. So, because you didn't actually do the action that put it there, then you can't really do much about it in that way, except to contemplate and to realize this is the quality of ill will, and not in a blaming way. This is one of the atmosphere that we breathe. Psychologically, there is this trend, the ill will trend, the hostility, the non-loving kindness, the absence of it, the aridity of the atmosphere, the non-caring, the brute, you know. And then our aspiration and encouragement is, could it be that even in that, even with those potentials there, I'm not triggered by it because the heart itself has found access to goodwill, generating goodwill, generating compassion, generating appreciation, generating equanimity. So we start to, you know, cultivate, sustain, look for the signs, the symbols, the images, the inclinations, the suggestions, the attitudes that will foster, strengthen these qualities, so that we don't keep sliding back into that footprint. Even if somebody pushes you in towards it, you don't go into it. As we say in the image of the simile of the saw, the Buddha is saying, you know, if somebody, robbers, catch you at the crossroads and start sawing off your limbs, then if you have any degree of ill will, then you really haven't fully developed the practice. Of course, it's a pretty high standard. I think the Buddha made these very striking statements to, you know, well, what's that? And you can kind of figure it out in some way logically. Like, well, what's the point of having a will anyway? You know, it's not going to... They got you tied down, sawing you up. You know, it doesn't do you any good. And then it's not that you think they're great or you love them, but there's a quality of this. What's really necessary in such a time is for the mind to not get overwhelmed with hatred, fear, rancor, resentment, whatever. You know, the heart is sustained. Sustain the heart, because the body has to go. Sustain the heart. And situations, there are probably many causes for feeling irritable and cheated and unfairly dealt with and so forth that are true, and yet also as a Dhamma practitioner saying, yes, this isn't true potential. Is it possible that you could protect your heart? And in Dhamma practice, yes. Willingness to meet the unpleasant, compassion. Willingness to open to the unpleasant, to just as one would embrace, you know, a cat or a dog or a cuddly thing, one embraces the ugly, crying, screaming. So the citta doesn't slide into these hellish states. Appreciation. Mudita. Ability to savor the good, the painless. The freedom from pain, the degree of health, sanity, clarity that's present. And it's great gain for me that in this mottled world I see the bright and I linger in the bright and I associate with the bright. I have done the bright. I have cultivated generous qualities. How does that feel? How did it feel to cultivate the patient qualities? How did that feel? Do you take stock of these and feel blessed by them? Because if I hadn't cultivated those, I would really be in trouble. You know, I hadn't cultivated the generous or the patient or the honest, or, you know, I didn't get stuck in liquor and drink. Wow, it's great gain. You see people ruined by that. Notice, you know, the bad that one hasn't done. And, you know, I could have. We're all capable of that. And compassion for those who weren't able to do that. Equanimity is this recognition that, you know, things are constantly flowing, changing, shifting. So it means that you stay open to the flow of experience and don't make a final statement. Right? Oh, that's it, got it. No, that's not going to work. Oh, it's never going to, you know, I haven't got it. No, that's not true either. It means there's this movement of conditions, from the positive to the negative, the afflicted, the bright, places where the stuck potential, and places where it's freed up. And so this is spans the domain of citta and its volitional quality, its ability to be activated. So this both means actions and also the ability to be activated, the potential to be triggered. Yeah. In our practice, then we can think, oh, this potential to be triggered has been completed. I know, you know, that one doesn't happen for me, or hasn't happened for a long time. Oh, what's that like? Ceasing, quietening, ceasing, something has ceased. Empty. An emptiness that's not blank, but just rich, rich spaciousness. And then, oh, that's it. And then, bang. There's something that still active arises, potentials arise, triggers arise. So I say equanimity means we stay open and to this flow of cetasikas, mental concomitants, mental potentials in the field of citta. So, and then of course there is the escape from the field of citta, the unconditioned. So having progressed through or processed this domain of cause and effect and potentials and being activated and so on, having completed that, having longer been triggered, there is the escape from the field of cetana, of karma. This is possible. So then citta, this moment of escape, is called anya, realization. Sometimes nisarana, the escape, the way out, realization. Realization that one has escaped. Or escape has happened. Vimutti, realization that liberation and liberation has arisen. So these are this anya, of which there are the four, stream entry and so on. When whole clusters of residues of attachment, of acquisitions fall away. Substrate of self disappears. Now, most of our practice is to get, from the big picture to the more parochial view is learning, because there is this domain of cetana, we have to learn to be flexible and agile within it. Otherwise, what's going to happen? We just go to the always go back to the defaults. There's a sense in which we're numb. We just get thrown into these like a shuttlecock, like a baseball. Bong, there you go, there you go, there you go, there you go. So it's this sense of, if you don't get flexible, if you don't learn how to hold your ground, if you don't know how to duck, you don't know how to weave, you don't know how to open, if you haven't got this flexibility of intention, then, it's like you can't dance, it's too stiff, you just get knocked around. So you have to cultivate flexibility of intent. And this means there's a sense in which the citta has to begin to feel its own potentials, to rise, to open, to delight, to steady, to stabilize, to expand, to discern. And so this is our bhavana, cultivation. And in cultivating an issue, we get strength, bala. Mind becomes strong, not easily knocked around, not easily crushed. And building this up. To the degree to which, when that is process, the exercises, the learning processes are established, then the citta begins to do it by itself. You don't have to keep saying, come on, get back to this, come on, do it again. It citta starts to know what to do. It may need reminders occasionally, reminders, check in, remind, but then eventually it begins to know what to do. And then you don't have this meditator doing it all the time. Now, the meditator, the one who does meditation, is a feature of what we experience, and the one who's trying to learn the system, get it, writes a sheet on how many hours they sat or walked or what their practice is about, and the meditator, which is probably the necessary scaffolding to support the citta, until as the citta gets stronger, the meditator can fall away. But it's not strong enough, you still need to be somebody there doing it. And so starting to practice these things. You're practicing metta, you deliberately pick up that which attracts it. One would feel the worthy, the beautiful, that which one would actually rather enjoy moving towards. And you pick up themes of that nature, just to get the citta to remember this. It's stuck in negativity, self-complaining, criticisms, doubt, depression, then you just pick it up and put it into something where it can feel, oh, I could love that. It rises. It's mundane practice, that which we could care for and protect. Creatures, people sick. People in afflictions, where compassion would arise. So you can trigger these to get the feeling that the citta knows, oh, there's that energy, that potential. Mudita, celebration. Sometimes this one gets missed because compassion kind of seems more noble. But mudita, absolutely necessary to gladden the heart and to acknowledge and affirm and highlight the good in oneself and others. So really this piece, mudita, sometimes lacking, and then without really knowing it, we're not fully offering back to ourselves and to others the beauty of our actions. That's often there to be highlighted. Remember this, anamodana is the expression that the Sangha uses, and almsgiving, anamodana. Acknowledge this, the generosity, the goodwill, acknowledge it. It's very practical. Rather than saying thank you, which is gracious, but anamodana means the mirror, look, that was, you see? Turn it back. This helps to wash away cynicism, or purely pragmatic. Give them the food they need to eat. Give them the food they've done. Give them the food. Wash the dishes. That's it. Pragmatically, yeah. But give the food and notice the quality of giving. Examples such as this, where we linger in the felt quality. The heart quality in what we do, whether it's the chores or the service, or even any actions we cultivate in retreat, you have the chance, because there's no great pressure or hurry and no rewards, no promotions from bathroom cleaning to putting out the shrine or something. It's all there you are, and so just this is my service. This is making it comfortable for others and offering beautiful qualities to cultivate. So the citta knows this. It gets familiar with those chetanas, those tendencies that enrich our lives. Upeka, equanimity, is the weather, being with the weather, internal and external. This too will change. Trust the process. Now, when these qualities are, as any mental qualities are embodied, they acquire double strength. Certainly, these qualities, if one considers them, we can recognize these are attractive qualities as ideas, But then realizing that many of the upadhi, the residues, the acquisitions, how are embodied. You have somatic pressures, somatic contractions, somatic absences, dullness in the body, areas blocked, no juice in them. And this is rarely because of diet. Maybe, but rarely because of physical conditions. This is by and large because of emotional and psychological conditions. The body responds somatically to contact and to contact from others and to the atmospheres in our shared domain. We feel nervy, we feel retracted, and so on. So this, bringing these qualities into the embodied domain is necessary to clear these residues. This is where you really begin to encourage you to, when you cultivate a quality like metta or karuna, you may have an image, an idea that triggers that, an inclination, but actually feel the energy of it. Try to sample the energy of goodwill, the richness of it, the fluidity of it, the warming of it. Notice they're all described the same in that the chant we do. Exalted, a certain lifted, abundant richness, measureless, no boundaries, like something that flows. For the qualities of those qualities. Abundant, exalted, free from the cramp, the souring, the closure effects of ill will. Open, free from these cramping effects. You detect the energies, so you deliberately cultivate these qualities on a kind of surface level to others. Yeah, and then sample the qualities so your citta becomes familiar with those qualities, not just as phrases, not just to him or to her, but as energies. And then feel those energies in your body when your heart opens. When sometimes your skin seems to open up, you feel less bounded, less fenced off. Internally, you may have areas which seem fenced off, bounded, withheld, defended, undernourished, absent, stale, stagnant. Is it possible to cultivate these cherishing, nurturing qualities and wash them through this very body, so that the somatic imprints can be released. If they're not released, then they're going to rise again. You may feel in a good space, but if that potential isn't released, if the upadhi is not cleared, then sooner or later, some is going to drop into your in tray that brings all that up again. In your body, you can know it. Because many of these aspects don't actually have much voice to them. Or they're the voice that's fairly convincing. They don't say, I'm ill will. They say, well, I'm not really that, it's not really my place to say very much here because I'm only, what? I don't want to disturb you because, what? Why should you be a disturbance? Wouldn't it be a joy? Yeah. So they do all kinds of things like this. They're slightly dampening, you know, qualities or inhibiting qualities that may have quite reasonable voices that have become your own. Voices of obligation. Well, I've got to do this. What's that? Well, if I don't, there'll be... That's fear, isn't it? I've got to work it out. I've got to... Why? Where did the got to come from? What would happen if you didn't? Disorientation. We get into these limiting factors. Obligation. Feeling like one is a nuisance to others, unworthy of others' attention, fundamentally flawed. Something goes wrong and it must be my fault. And so these can be very convincing. And so there's no point really trying to work it out on the head level, but just notice what happens in your body when you get that shivering and shock and tightening and fluster and panic and tremble and shrinking. Okay, let's cultivate right there. You know, everybody gets this, it's not something so specifically yourself, everybody gets these kind of experiences. That's the territory. That's what we work with. All of us work with that when it occurs. It doesn't have to be, it can be just the memory can do it. And in retreat time, as you know, this is a time when the footprints start moving around. Yeah. From memory, from other people, from kinds of the future, creates fear and worry. The past can create fear and worry. Other people can create fear and worry. Ah, this means I have a lot of fear and worry. Get it? A common denominator. And where does that sit? Where does that sit in my body? Is it wrapped around my chest? Is it in my belly, my throat? Does it close my skin boundary so I become narrow and tight? So what are the ones that don't speak? We often are given encouragement to listen to the chatter in our heads and listen to the space and let the chatter die away into the space. The chattering in the head is not, it's a bit irritating. It's not such a big problem, really, because you can step back. It's not fun, but you can step out of it, and you can. You can step back from that. And just to know that you can do that, the chitta has this escape, this way of stepping back. But it's the stuff that doesn't speak is more difficult. It's just the somatic tension, somatic palpitation, waking up in the night, feeling flustered, no particular voice to it. These are the footprints, the upadhi, the acquisitions, that have, they may have been of experiences that were so difficult that one's citta decided just to bury it because one couldn't deal with it. So this is another strategy that citta adopts, is just to, what it cannot, you know, overcome or deal with, just close it, close it, close it. This is a defense strategy. Then these start coming out. So one has, you know, really to encourage this cleaning the somatic domain. The results are that the somatic domain becomes stable, present, radiant, vibrant, alive, a tremendous resource for strength, for ease, for energy. Such that one can easily get even dazzled by it, but then realize this is just the results of good. It's not still, it's just that, it's still in, you know, the conditioned. So one is aware of that, aware of that. So these energetic effects, and they can be blended, are a resource. And of course there's one more powerful intention, which in a way is the supreme intention, because it's the intention of wisdom, to inquire, to sense, to step back, to balance, to a sense which is appropriate, what's really happening here. This is the wisdom faculty. And wisdom, in terms of the conditioned experience, has an intent to it. The intent to handle, the intent to manage, the intent to investigate, the intent to balance. So there's an intent towards what is experienced. So not just changing the nature of experience, but an intent to handle that experience. What is appropriate? Is this a time when we just linger and take in the good, or is it time we question, where's that really coming from, which we think is 5 years ago, which we think is what she said to me yesterday? What's happening now? It's that inquiring, that yoni soma manasikara, turning back to the source, turning the mind back to the source of conditions. Where did that come from? It's not yesterday. Well, it may have been, but now it's here. What is this? So we take the mask off the hindrance. And so there's this intention. It's a wise intention. An intention to step back and linger. This is to be savoured. This is to take in time. The intention to relax. Now is the time to rest. So these are various ways in which our wisdom faculty operates. It's not, wisdom is not an accumulator of knowledge. Wisdom is the facilitator of know-how. Adjusting, to be developed. Now when the common feature of our stuck problem is that when an unfortunate condition arises, we get like the rabbit in the headlights, like, oh yeah, yeah, what's going on? Help, you're stuck. Shouldn't be like this, you know. It's the stuck chitta, you know, like pinned by whatever's just walked in through the door, particularly the ones that have no voice. What's this about? You know, we can freeze, faint, you know, fly, a few others with F that you could conjure up, but they're all this kind of immediate frozen reaction to experience, reaction to experience. And you notice certain qualities occur in that when one reacts, things speed up. Either things speed up or the time frame changes. You get a strong sense of time. other things are really rushing along, you feel thrown in volitionally. That's the potential of that hindrance. Releases its energy into the system and everything speeds up. So we don't decide to do that. It's just the very quality of what has been revealed carries huge charge in it. Now, when you touch into that, the energy of that is released and you start speeding and your mind starts trying to figure out what to do in a hurry. Why it's like this, and who and where I'm like this, and how long I'll be like that, and what should I do now? You know, is it should be mindful or investing? You know, it starts to do this stuff and stuff. And ideas aren't bad, but what's the speed? That is not the speed at which wisdom can operate. That's the speed of panic. So then that you're sensing this as. We may very well sense it. Just we pause. Question: what's happening in the body? Can you breathe out? Where are your feet? So widening, whole body. Widening, whole domain. Widen, soften, to cut the engine, the speed. Now you can, things have opened, now you can get in there with your investigation. Without that changing, without that handling of volitional push, then things are too tightly woven, interwoven. You can't get in. You want to, the very volitional push tightens the whole mix into something quite impenetrable. And we're just thinking about it. We're thinking about it. And we may be even giving a Dhamma talk. Thoughts aren't bad, but they're just not going in because everything's moving too fast and you haven't penetrated it. So this stopping, pausing, cutting, checking, body, body, body. Uncomfortable. Of course it's uncomfortable. It wouldn't be a hindrance if it wasn't uncomfortable. And easing, what's needed? Compassion, goodwill, comforting, space, time, rhythm, ground. So just helping the citta back to its feet again. Helping the citta come together again from its shocked state. Bringing it together. Now, investigate. 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 Investigate in terms of nothing too complex. Just this is dukkha. This is pressure. This is twisted. This is screaming. This is flattened. What's needed? What's needed? What's always needed? Compassion, goodwill, heart. That which was shocked, so shocked it ran out. So confused it ran away. That's what's needed. Bringing it back into this traumatized domain. This is, practice to be very patient with, because the most immediate response, I would suggest, in many cases, is going to be one of these freeze, fight, flight, faint, fudge. Qualities, where we are. There's the most. If it's a whiplash response, it's probably the wrong one. It's a program, it's a reaction. True response is always begins with the pause, lift, body. soften, widen. Let heart come in. Completion, peace can be relinquished.